My name is Patrick J. McGinnis, and I coined the term FOMO. That's short for fear of missing out, and it's why some people end up following the crowd. But we're not like them. We're part of a new species that isn't afraid to do things differently. I call us FOMO sapiens. And this is the show where you'll meet people like us, phenomenal FOMO sapiens, to learn how they find the courage and the ideas to live exceptional lives.
FOMO. FOMO.
Welcome back to FOMO Sapiens, the show for people who don't just follow the crowd, but instead take their own path to success in business and in life. I'm your host, Patrick J. McGinnis, venture capitalist by day, author and podcaster by night, and FOMO Sapiens 24/7. And today we're going to talk to Jason Karp, who is the founder and CEO of HumanCo, and it is a mission-driven holding company that is fanatical about creating products that help people to live healthier lives. Now, before that, Jason was the founder and CEO of Tourbillon Capital Partners. I hope I said that right. And it was an investment fund that managed over $4 billion, and he has more than 20 years of investment experience. So he kind of went from Wall Street into entrepreneurship. And he's also been an investor in a bunch of cool companies that help us live better, like Nutrinex, Aura, Airgraph, Primal Kitchen, Beekeepers Naturals, and our old friends at Magic Spoon. Now, you'll remember that Magic Spoon, we talked to the co-founder, last season. And it's a really interesting story. And of course, they help people to live better. Now, on this episode, you're going to learn a couple things. Number one, you're going to hear about the very personal reasons why Jason started a wellness company and then left his $4 billion hedge fund to go all in on building something for the industry. He talks about how hard it was to leave this very high-flying life, this hedge fund world in New York City, to do something completely different, and how a lot of people just looked at him like it was a little crazy. He also talks about how success looks from the outside. This is a person who's had a lot of success, and he recognized, you know, it looks so great from the outside, but living it, especially if you have a passion that's different than what you're doing all day, can be very different than what it looks like. And finally, this is a guy who kind of always knows the hot place to be spending time, investing time, and building things. And so he'll tell us how he figures that out. Now, my small ask of the week. I mentioned Magic Spoon a second ago. Go back and find that episode. It's a really good one. It aired on November 19th, 2020. And while you're there in the archives, pick around and see if there's anything else that appeals to you. And if you don't mind, subscribe and give me some stars and a nice review. It really helps people to discover the show. And now onto the interview. I started our conversation with my favorite question by asking Jason this. What's the most important decision that you've had to make to get to where you are today?
So I was frequently sick as a child, you know, all the way through high school, always had sinus infections, always sort of felt like off, had terrible, terrible allergies, never really knew why. And then, but I just sort of thought that was like, you know, the cards I was dealt. And then when I got to, when I started working, I was a college athlete. I always thought I was healthy. You know, people always thought I was healthy. But I didn't really know what healthy meant. And I was raised kind of in the 80s and 90s when sort of healthy was things like Snackwells and like no fat and all sorts of, you know, wrong nutritional information. And then in my first 2 years of working, I went straight out of college to a hedge fund, very, very high stress, long hours, you know, really intense. I thought I wanted to do the work hard, play hard thing, which most, you know, overachieving types like to do out of college. And I got really sick in my second and third year of working. I started developing a whole variety of symptoms. I was losing my hair in clumps. I had psoriasis. I felt just terrible all the time. I had horrific brain fog. And then what really was bad was I started losing my vision. And I had double vision. And I was diagnosed with a degenerative corneal disease where they told me I was going to be blind by the age of 30, fully blind. And that was like a death sentence to me. I mean, everyone who's listening obviously can appreciate what it would be like to literally go blind in your 20s. And it was a really difficult period for me. And they told me there was no cure. They told me it was a degenerative eye disease. It was sort of the cards I was dealt and like, too bad. And I didn't believe it. I refused to believe it. It was sort of a naivete that I think served me well. I've always been a bit anti-establishment and not really believing authority. And I went down a lot of rabbit holes. This is back in 2001 when health and wellness wasn't really a thing. And Eastern medicine and now what they call functional medicine, which addresses the root causes of diseases instead of the symptoms, wasn't, again, acknowledged as a real form of science and medicine. And now it is today. And the long story short is I cured myself through food and lifestyle over the next, you know, call it 12 to 16 months. And I fully reversed everything, including my seemingly incurable eye disease. And then from there, you know, I sort of developed this mindset that you shouldn't accept dogma and you shouldn't accept kind of expert guidance if it doesn't sort of feel right to you. And I decided to really devote a big part of my life to health and wellness and to understanding sort of why I got sick, why I was able to reverse it, what was wrong with sort of all the modern belief system around health and wellness. Yeah, so it was very, very personal to me. You know, I view that almost as a near-death experience because of how sick I was. I was deeply depressed, and I felt like there was no hope.
It's amazing just listening to the story because listeners to the show know that I have kind of a similar experience where after the financial crisis, 2008, I was working at AIG. So AIG blows up. I'm suddenly like at the doctor's. He's got me on a heart monitor. I have blurry vision for months on end. And then through a bunch of changes was able to get back on track. And so, you know, I think many of us, we have people who have been successful and haven't hit a wall, and then you hit that wall and you're sort of like, well, I can't sort of the work hard, play hard. You mentioned like pushing until you hit the wall. It's not sustainable. And so you make changes. Now you took this and you started a business. So how did all of this end up manifesting itself into building Human Co? And what is Human Co?
The more people become educated about the toxic elements of modern living, and it sounds sensationalist, but it's quite well documented. Everything from plastics to the chemicals that are in our food supply to pesticides, herbicides, to highly processed food with lots of fake ingredients. All of these things have been clinically shown without any debate or controversy that these are terrible for human health, that they're a dramatic influence on the obesity, diabetes, heart disease, modern chronic diseases epidemic that we're all facing. And I find that the more people sort of get educated and aware about all this stuff, the harder it is to live in a sort of happy, free state. You're always paranoid. You're always skeptical. You're always asking questions like, who made this? What's in it? Who is behind it? What's it going to do to me? And I find it's really hard to live a conscious and conscientious lifestyle. And so Human Co was really an outgrowth of everything that I've done for the last 20 years. My family and I built a health and wellness oriented food company called Hue Kitchen. Hue stood for human. And our tagline at Hue is get back to human. We're really known for our organic, simple ingredient chocolates. But we also have grain-free cookies. We have grain-free crackers. And it started with that. And I was also an angel investor, an advisor, and a board member of several other health and wellness oriented companies across called what I'll call modern living, which includes, you know, anything you put in your body. So think of food, beverage, supplements, nutrition, anything you put on your body. So think of personal care, beauty, household products like soaps, et cetera. And then technology that goes into living a healthier lifestyle and it sort of allows you and makes it easier for you to live a healthier lifestyle. Think of like the Oura Ring, which I was an early investor in. And I was doing all of this because this is where my personal passions are. And frankly, it's what I need to do to stay healthy, given my own autoimmune issues. And I wanted to build a singular company that wasn't a fund, that had permanent capital so that we didn't have like a duration or a fuse on how long we could hold these investments. And to basically buy companies that we think allow people to live a healthier lifestyle with trust, and to incubate companies from scratch.
FOMO.
Tudo bem, meus queridos FOMO sapiens? Now that right there was Portuguese, and as you know, I love speaking foreign languages. But I'm not alone. One in five Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off that list with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's tips and tools are approachable, accessible, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Now, FOMO sapiens, you know I speak four languages, and it takes work to stay on top of them, especially with French. C'est difficile. But with Babbel, I'm able to practice practical conversations that I can actually use in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/FOMO. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/FOMO. That's spelled BABBEL.com/FOMO. Rules and restrictions may apply. Now, when you started doing all of these things, you were actually running your own hedge fund at the time. Not just a tiny little hedge fund either. This was a hedge fund that had over $4 billion in assets under management, which is a lot of money. And you decided to leave all of that behind. And I got to imagine that your peers, the people that you saw every day in the industry, they looked at you like you were nuts. So did you feel pressure not to leave behind what is a very lucrative and prestigious industry where you were doing really well to go off and do something completely different?
I felt tremendous pressure. And it was, you know, look, I think when it comes to decisions I've made, I think I've made a lot of poor decisions that were good decisions financially for me. And good decisions based on what I thought was expected of me and were really sort of exogenous or external expectations of me. But they were bad decisions for my health. They were bad decisions for what I'll call my soul and my happiness. And that was a very difficult thing for me to sort of get my hands around. Because I was in these circles, you know, I went to Wharton undergrad, which is, you know, a super competitive, very sort of money, success, financially focused school. You know, it's the best, I think it's still the best business school in the country, but it recruits people who are specifically very ambitious for success in business. And so I was there. Then I went to New York City, which, you know, the whole city revolves around finance and money and visible kind of success. And then I was in the hedge fund industry, which is sort of the, you know, the ultimate manifestation of all this.
Yeah, we all watch Billions, right? I mean, I don't watch Billions because it makes me feel poor. But yeah, the point is that it is all about the money.
Yeah. You know, and I worked at the firm that was modeled, that Billions was modeled off. So it was... you know, I was in that lifestyle very much. And for a while, I really liked it. I sort of had a love-hate relationship with it. But what was challenging for me, you know, and this is one of those things that's sort of hard to talk about publicly because people like to throw stones. But, you know, when you're at the top of your game and you're the leader of a firm and you're very visibly financially successful, people presume, because of the financial success, they presume that everything's great. And so it's very, for that person. And it's very hard to say to people around you, like, I'm not happy. Or this is really difficult for me. Because people are like, why should you complain? Like, you know, you've made XYZ or you're this or you're that. And there's this expectation that because you sort of fit this part that people think is what success looks like, you can't really show that you're vulnerable. And that was really tough. And so I had a lot of peers and friends who were envious of what my financial kind of success appeared like. And I could never say to them, like, yeah, I'm kind of done with this, because they would say, like, you know, I wish I was in your spot. Like, you know, how dare you? How dare you get to where you've gotten and not appreciate what you have. And that was a really, really hard thing for me, because there's merit to that view. And I was always fortunate in how I was able to make decisions. I've certainly been blessed with a lot of luck as well. And it was extremely difficult for me, but I think a lot of my closer peers who I could confide in, who didn't have jealousy issues, always knew I was so passionate about health and wellness. You know, we started Hue as a family, my brother-in-law, Jordan Brown, and my wife, Jessica. We started Hue officially in 2012, but we started thinking about it in 2010, initially as a restaurant. And that was about halfway through my hedge fund career. And so my closest friends knew that I did have this passion for health and wellness. They always thought it was just sort of a hobby, which initially it was. But the more time I spent on it, and frankly, the more investing I did, even public markets for my hedge fund within the health and wellness space, both long and short, the more I realized that this is where sort of my energy and my happiness sort of met what I wanted to spend all my hours on. And I feel like anyone will be really successful at where their natural energies gravitate. And so for me, it was really around this. And I kind of hit a wall. But 2015 was a really, really important year for me, because it was this year where our assets, you know, got to $4.5 billion. We won Best New Hedge Fund of the Year from Institutional Investor, which was sort of like the Oscar.
and
we had 3 years in a row of really strong returns. And I remember at when we won the award, I remember saying to my wife, like, I don't think I could do better than this. Like, this is literally like, this is like winning a championship ring, you know, in sports, or winning an Oscar in acting. Like, this is what I've been doing my whole life to do. And I just did it. And you know, from like all aspects, the money, the achievement, the accolades, whatever you want to say. And I was miserable. And my health was terrible. And I was looking around like, oh, my God. And I had a mentor. I won't say who it is, but an extremely accomplished, extremely wealthy person, who once said to me, I've been to the top of the mountain and there's nothing to see.
Oh, wow.
And I really felt that at that moment. And that was sort of like, that was my real wake up call.
Now, there's this interesting dynamic here. And this is something that I think, you know, I imagine right now people are listening, and some of you who are listening are like, oh, this is really resonating, right? Because there's this idea out there, like, if you know, you keep pushing forward, even if you're not happy or you're not getting what you need, that, you know, if the money is there, like, I'll keep saving the money, and then someday ... I'll do what I want to do, right? And one of the beauties, by the way, of doing, for example, working in a hedge fund, is you save enough money that you have the flexibility to go off and do other things you want to do, right? So it's not like it's all bad, right? It gives you more opportunities and flexibility than you would have had otherwise. But I'm curious, Jason, as you think about that, like, everybody has the different number. So for one person, it's like, I'm going to go do what I want to do today. I have nothing in my bank account. For another person, they couldn't have. I have one buddy who I won't say who it is, who's like, will never feel successful unless he has $100 million in the bank. And I always say, well, like, that's really sad, because like, you wouldn't even know what to do with all that money. And so as you think about a person who's listening right now, who is in a job that they don't necessarily like, wants to do something different, but also has that fear of, you know, kind of, I don't want to say scarcity mindset, because for some people, yeah, you know, we do need a certain amount of money to just pay the bills. Like, how do you think about making a decision about when enough is enough in the day job? You know, you've got enough in the bank that you can go off and do something else that's going to potentially even make you a lot more money, but also just at least make you happier and more fulfilled in your career.
Yeah, this is a great question. And it's sort of an age old question. And it's one that I've thought about for, you know, since I was probably 10 years old. And, you know, I grew up in a household that sort of prided work ethic. My father was a retail stockbroker for Merrill Lynch, you know, which was sort of like a great job growing up in a middle class kind of area. And I always had these aspirations of being financially independent. And you know, and I grew up kind of in that 80s, you know, culture of movies like Wall Street and you know, and things like that. And you know, I think it's a very dangerous hamster wheel where you can't get off of it, you know, and I've seen it all around me, particularly in my old industry, the hedge fund industry, where guys would have a number, you know, first it's 10, then it's 30, then it's 50, then it's 100. And then, you know, they're always looking around at who's bigger and better than them. And it's never enough. I've met very, very, very few people, I literally could count them on one hand, that were able to make a lot of money and then just stop and be like, okay, I did it. I'm done. I mean, I think it's extraordinarily difficult to do that, especially if you see a pathway where you can keep making more money. And it's a very, you know, money is a very dangerous addiction and drug. And it's sort of a form of power. But I do applaud people for wanting to have financial independence. And I think, you know, being an entrepreneur or going into a high stress, very difficult type of field where you can make a lot of money requires a lot of sacrifices that I think a lot of people don't fully understand. And sacrifices for your living, for your happiness, for your health, for what other things you can do and pursue. And I also think this notion, which is very popular now, and maybe I'm a little bit of a sort of an old geezer, this notion of like, you should start in the job that is your true calling and it has to be fulfilling. Like, I think that's garbage. You know, I think it's very difficult. You have to earn the right to get into that position. And you have to pay your dues in a lot of ways. And you have to learn from a lot of different types of people and have a lot of mentors along the way. I mean, I had many roles and jobs that I thought were terrible and I didn't like. But I viewed them almost like the cost of education and learning. And I think it's really important to just be introspective. And as you're doing things and as you're working in different roles and different jobs, to keep a log. Or at least to be really introspective and think like, I didn't like this because of why. And really, really think through why you don't like it. You know, because there's a lot of reasons why people don't like work, right? You know, it could be menial labor that's just repetitive. It could be that it's not challenging. It could be that it's too challenging. It could be that you don't like the people around you. It could be that there's no purpose to what you're doing. And I think it's super important that each person sort of thinks through, why is it that I'm not liking this? And then also, like, what aspects of the job you do like? And then to just keep, you know, the key to me about good decision making is always keeping your options open and always iterating and constantly exposing yourself to enough things that you can fairly say, I've seen a lot and now I kind of know the general direction of what I like and what I don't like. And that would be sort of my advice. FOMO.
Tell me if this sounds familiar. Your business gets to a certain size and the cracks start to emerge. Things you used to do in a day are taking a week. You don't have one source of truth. If this is you, you should know these three numbers. 37,000, 25, 1. 37,000. That's the number of businesses which have upgraded to NetSuite by Oracle. 25. NetSuite turns 25 this year. Happy birthday. That's 25 years of helping businesses do more with less, close the books in days, not weeks, and drive down costs. 1. Because your business is one of a kind, so you get a customized solution for all of your KPIs. Those are key performance indicators in one efficient system. Now, FOMO Sapiens, you know the show is all about making better decisions. And with this product, you can make better decisions because you have all the information you need right in one place. Right now, download NetSuite's popular KPI checklist designed to give you consistently excellent performance absolutely free at netsuite.com/FOMO. That's netsuite.com/FOMO to get your own KPI checklist. Because you know what? KPIs are better than ice cream. netsuite.com/FOMO.
FOMO.
I think it's good advice. And I do agree. I mean, these, you say it's a geezer perspective, right? I think the same way. It's like that first job out of college, like it terrified me working on Wall Street because I was like, didn't want to work the hours, but you get this education that serves you and all the, and you can leave that, but you have that with you the rest of your career and on your CV and your head. Now, Jason, you have one of the things that really amazed me about you as I read your background is like, you seem to have this incredible talent of being able to spot the place that is going to be a really huge opportunity next. So, you know, you went to the hedge fund world and then you built up the hedge fund. You get into health and wellness, you know, early on in the trend and have turned this into this huge company, HumanCo, and you're building these brands and you're acquiring brands. You're building this, you know, I guess what some have described as a Berkshire Hathaway model of wellness. And then you get into the SPAC world, which is another area where we'll see where that plays out. But, you know, it's like it's become this huge part of finance, and it's, you know, it's the hot space to be in. So you have this ability to sort of see things in, before other people, which I think is unusual. And maybe you know that, maybe you don't. But I see pattern recognition in a lot of things I do. And I'm like, this guy, like, I should just follow him around and do exactly what he's doing. What is it that allows you to do that?
It's a good question. I think it's a combination of a bunch of things. You know, I think an analogy I like to give is I was a very enthusiastic and studious poker player starting from when I was in, you know, middle school. And before kind of online poker, I read every book that was available on it. I played a ton. You know, my first year of working, I made more playing poker than I did in my job. And so I was technically a semi-professional poker player in 1998. And I use poker as a metaphor for training, or I used to, for training my analysts and my team in investing. And I think poker is a great metaphor for life as well. And one of the things as it relates to decision making and why I think I'm able to spot things a lot faster is I have invested heavily in my own education around patterns and around history and around case studies. And I just love absorbing lessons, good lessons and frankly, a lot of bad lessons, like mistakes and failures. And you know, I remember my failures and my losses far, far better than I remember any of my wins. And I make sure that I don't repeat those mistakes. And I think a lot of my good decisions or whatever success I've had are a function of me making mistakes less often than my peers, because I learned them either the hard way or from other people. The analogy with poker, though, that's so important is if you understand all the odds, you know there's a finite number of hands you could be dealt in a game like Texas Hold'em. And the beauty of online poker when that was created is you could sit in front of your computer and instead of playing one game where you would see one hand every, you know, 2 minutes or so, you could open up five or six or seven windows and literally see as many hands as you want and just keep folding until you see, you know, what they call sort of premium hands, things like pocket aces or pocket kings or pocket queens or what have you. And I sort of view my life as a metaphor for playing online poker, where I try to expose myself to as many hands as I can. And I have a good pattern recognition system now, where I could sort of see things and I see what is the equivalent of pocket aces or pocket kings. And most of the time I'm folding. I'm looking at tons and tons of hands all the time. And I'm reading everything I can get my hands on, you know, from business journals to scientific journals to USA Today. And then I start to sort of see patterns. And a lot of it also has to do with my own attraction to something, you know, and I find that my own attraction tends to be pretty good in terms of its read through to the public. So when I started eating, you know, really healthy stuff, and I would come across stuff that I thought was actually delicious and that I was binging on, you know, I sort of thought like, oh, if I'm binging on this and it meets my standards, I think everyone else is going to do it too. And so a lot of my influence also was Steve Jobs, and this idea of, you know, recognizing what I want in the world and then sort of developing a framework where I believe other people are going to want it. And that if it meets my standards, I think it'll be something that'll be really different. And so it's a lot of those different elements, in terms of sort of how I spot things. But the most important variable is exposure. You know, if you don't see a lot of ideas, you're not going to have, an ability to sort of pick what you think is going to be the next thing.
All right. So the company is Human Co. You can check it out at humanco.com, and you can check out Snow Days Pizza Bites. I tried it myself. Jason was nice enough to send it my way, and let's just say that the family devoured them. And that, this is not a paid endorsement. I just ate them all, so they're pretty good. All right. Jason Karp, founder of and CEO of Human Co., thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, Patrick. Thanks for having me. FOMO.
Big news, we now have a brand new website. So head over to FOMOSapiens.com where you can listen to past episodes, learn more about the show, and find out how to advertise. Also, head over to Spotify where you can find and follow playlists of the best of the show. You can also connect with me on Instagram at Patrick J. McGinnis, on Twitter at PJ McGinnis, and on LinkedIn. I'd love to hear from you, so don't be shy. FOMO Sapiens is recorded in New York City. Theme music is by Mike McGinnis, and editing and post-production is by Josh Elstro. If you like today's show, please be sure to rate it and recommend it to your friends. And as always, you can find me at FOMOSapiens.com and at PatrickMcGinnis.com. To advertise on FOMO Sapiens, reach out to contact@FOMOSapiens.com. FOMO.